Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The following production is part of the We Be Geeks podcast collective.
From days long ago, from uncharted regions of the universe, comes a legend.
The dream that came through a million years, that lived on through all the tears.
It came here, the Fandom Nexus.
Fabulous secret powers were revealed to our host as he plugged in his microphone.
I have a podcast!
Here he is, your Spider-Pan, Jeremy.
Yes, it is indeed me. I am back from Planet Comic-Con, Kansas City, and I have a lot of audio I plan to share here, also with Diz Radio, so make sure you're checking in on both shows. I don't have a lot of time to make an intro. I'm trying to do this right quick before I leave for work here on Wednesday. Normally, I have an episode released on Wednesday. I'm just a little bit behind, but I wanted to share with you what we've got today. I have the Pop Culture Pastors, which I've been trying to coordinate with them here lately. We were going to try to do some panels together, which didn't work out, kind of fell through. They are somewhat local to me. They're over on the Kansas side of things. But I just decided I'd go and visit their booth. And I was like, let's just turn the mics on and see what happens. And what follows is a very fun conversation. I will share a little bit about what I've been playing, because I'm still playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. And I have discovered a character who may be more annoying than even Yuffie, which I don't like the character of Yuffie. Sorry for all you Yuffie fans out there, but Kyrie, who was introduced in the remake, is probably worse. Although I have had a Yuffie moment where I get to Costa del Sol and she says, oh, hey, Cloud, I know you just came to look me up to see how hot I look in my swimsuit, which I threw up in my mouth a little before I had to quickly give an answer because Cloud has to build a relationship with these characters. And I had to pick something, which I said, you just don't get a clue, do you? Because she's been annoying and following us around. And yeah, I'm not really enjoying her. But let's go ahead and let's listen to our conversation with Pop Culture Pastors. And also make sure you look in the show notes. I'm going to share a link for Katie Lee's new book on Amazon. Make sure you give that a purchase and a review. I did get a chance to talk to her about the book, which we'll be hearing in a later episode. Also with Bradley Pierce, voice of Chip. That's coming up later. Lots of fun stuff coming up later from Planet Comic Con. Lots of fun pictures on my Instagram. You look up the Spider-Pan. Also, of course, I did share them, of course, in our Facebook group and Facebook pages, stuff like that. So make sure you go and check that out. But without further ado, me and Dave and Cody of Pop Culture Pastors.
Hey, listen.
I'm talking.
You're talking. All righty, though. So I'm here with the Pop Culture Pastors, which I've been trying to figure out, like, okay, we need to coordinate. And we tried to do a panel this year, and we got turned down on both of them. But y'all are still here. We can still... We don't know where this show's going, but hi. So I, of course... I'm probably by this point in the show, if I haven't introduced myself, I am, of course, your Spider-Pan Jeremy. Y'all know me already. But Pop Culture Pastors, if you've not heard of them, although I've probably mentioned you guys a couple of times, because I think when meeting y'all last year, met you guys last year at the event we're at now, Planet Comic Con, Kansas City. See, I am good with English.
Yep.
So I'm here with Dave and Cody. And I'll let you introduce which one of you all are so they get close to your voice.
Yeah, I'm Dave. I'm a pastor. Pop Culture Pastor. This is Cody.
I'm Cody. I'm also a pastor slash therapist. So
yeah, really. So is that how the podcast started? Is it your therapy sessions just got that interesting?
Yeah. No. I'm not really sure how we started. To be honest, we did radio together. Mm-hmm. So we had a radio show, and it kind of sprung off from there where we did a podcast just about pop culture stuff because the radio. So we were on a Christian station, which is kind of constrictive or restrictive about what it is you're going to actually be able to talk about. And so we really like both grew up loving pop culture and movies and TV. And I wasn't raised in the church. So when I say I was raised by TV, I was raised by TV. And so that was just something we wanted to talk about. And so we wanted to start this podcast and come to comic conventions and really create a community around it.
Yeah.
And that was sort of the motivation. And yeah, here we are.
And here we are. And you, so like pop culture, you guys are, you're talking about basically everything.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We're all over the map.
You're all over the map. You're like, you know, anything interesting that you guys feel like talking about, it's in there.
TV, movies, video games, books, music. We even spent 15, 20 minutes talking about breakfast cereals on our most recent yes. pod. So, yeah, we'll talk about it pretty pop culture in the broad sense.
Very much.
For sure.
Yeah. And do it with a weird sense of fun. Because I sense there's a little bit, you know, mainly DC Comics fandom, but maybe a bit of a Marvel versus DC going on somewhere in there.
It's DC one directional. It's me. That's the DC fan.
Oh, yeah.
Dave is all about Marvel. Well, he also appreciates good DC. He's not a fan of the recent DCEU. Right. But so there's definitely fandoms that we go heavy into. And I don't hide my fandom. And so you will hear some rebuttal towards Marvel being just like the almighty in comic book movies. But yes, we go everywhere.
Yeah. There's been some decent DC movies in the past, just not currently.
Yeah, I don't hate DC. I don't actually grew up Marvel. In a macro sense, I love the Marvel universe. Mm-hmm. So I read a ton of Marvel, but there were characters in DC I really liked. I really like, yeah. So if Marvel was my favorite brand of comics, I might honestly say that Superman is actually my favorite character, which is seems kind of weird, but Superman done in a certain way. So I grew up in like the 80s and like the Frank Byrne era, you know, like when he was doing Man of Steel, like the Man of Steel comics, and I just really, I really liked Superman as a character. I really identified with like his loneliness. The fact that he's like, you know, he's an orphan from another planet who's all alone, and he finds humanity. He's raised by humans and he's loved by humans and he loves them back. Right. And yet he still can't quite, like he's got to keep his distance because their safety is at risk. You know, I love that kind of quality of the story. So,
yeah.
Yeah. There's things about DC characters I really like.
Yeah, they've got some good characters. I'm more of a Marvel guy myself, but I think I'm probably always going to have my love for Superman because of the Christopher Reeve movies. Because I think you're about my age.
Yeah,
and we grew up with those. Even the bad Christopher Reeve movies, like Quest for Peace, I watched multiple times when I was little.
Oh man,
yeah. I know it's not a great movie, but I'd watch it. I don't care. Yeah, I'd watch it. Yeah, I'll admit it.
That was the first time we went political, wasn't it? Superman 4,
Quest for Peace.
That was a super political movie.
Yeah, it was. Which I actually used to get Muppet Magazine when I was a kid, and they had Christopher Reeve in it, where he's being interviewed by Muppets, basically. He was, I think, in Bunsen and Beaker's lab or something doing experiments. Muppet Magazine would interview the people, and then they would Muppetize it and have it be like an interaction. And then they'd had it planned out, so they would take photos as if Christopher Reeve was there and with Bunsen and Beaker in their labs, and they'd have a funny thing that would happen. But then at the same time, he was able to talk about Quest for Peace because that was his project. He was firmly behind that. Like, well, I get it. We don't want to have a nuclear war. You know, that would be bad. Yeah. But yeah, I think it was a little too much with that agenda to be like a good.
Honestly, beware when the Hollywood stars say, oh, I wanted to do this movie, but I wanted it to have a message.
Right.
That's about the time I'm ready to tune out. I'm like, oh, all right, that sounds great, but I just want a Superman story.
I think you have somebody who knows Superman you that's story. Coming here. And because we're just going to be live, I'm just going to let it happen.
Yeah. Yeah. We're live. Sorry, we're talking to people.
Well, we're not like live, but we're recording it live.
Yeah.
But nobody's hearing it yet.
Hey, can
except for you, listener, who's listening to this pre-recorded probably next weekend.
Can we pause or do I just can I give him the mic?
Oh, yeah, you can pass it to him. You can talk to your friend over there.
Okay.
And so we can talk some DC stuff. Because all right, so you were born in the 80s, though, I guess, right?
Late 80s. Late 80s. So the Tim Burton Batman movies.
There.
That's where I get sucked in. And even the Joel Schumacher ones, for better, for worse.
For better, for worse.
And so Batman's my go-to. But as I grew up, DC Comics, it seemed to do a better job with like the psychology of like the characters, especially within the Batman realm, the Rogues Gallery. Each one has something traumatic that's happened to them that influences why they behave the way they do. Although I do want to clarify that people with mental health illness are not villains or bad people.
Right.
So
it's not normally just somebody having one bad day that turns a bad comedian into the Joker.
Exactly. Right. Or like how in the Joel Schumacher and Tim Burton universe, there's just acid everywhere that people are falling into.
People fall in, and you don't burn alive and disintegrate in acid. It just bleaches your skin.
Yes.
And makes you crazy.
Causes some issues later on down the road. So
that's the thing. And I figure the Tim Burton Batman is for you, like Christopher Reeve Superman is for us. Yes. That Tim Burton Batman would be for you. So that's kind of an interesting question with okay, so Jack Napier, he falls into the acid. Now, did it really make him crazy, or did it just take away his inhibitions to the crazy that was already there, you think? Because you remember, you know, he's talking to Eckhart, and Eckhart tells him, "You're an A1 nut boy, Grissom knows it." So you think he maybe was already a little crazy?
I think that there's definitely underlying issues that once he falls into the acid, it's like, A, I'm not going to care anymore.
Yeah, he looks that way now, so it's like...
Yeah, and B... It probably was a traumatic experience going through that, but there's definitely stuff that's there that's not being dealt with by him before. So
this is attractive. That is not. That is all behind me now.
Yes.
I make art until someone dies.
Exactly.
Yeah. As much as I loved Heath Ledger, Jack Nicholson is still my visual Joker. Granted, I also grew up watching the 60s Batman because it was in syndication, and I still love him just because it was goofy, and that's the Joker I grew up with. And Jack Nicholson, he's like, he had a little bit of that goofy, but he was scary goofy because he's Jack Nicholson.
He brought a definite aura to that character that no one else has. I do really like the Heath Ledger Joker, and
he's a different Joker though. Yes. He's very different.
He might be my go-to Joker just because now that we're in a more reality-based bat world, I guess.
Especially with this newer one. I still like that one. That's probably the best thing they've got going on right now at DC.
Yes.
Other than maybe the first Shazam movie. The second one I still liked, but it wasn't as good.
I am hopeful that James Gunn will get DC back on track. If Guardians of the Galaxy showed us anything... There's hope.
Yeah.
So
especially the way he talks about Superman.
Yeah.
And how he envisions Superman, because I don't have anything against Henry Cavill as Superman. I thought pretty good.
He looks the part.
Yeah. They just didn't write it very well.
No.
You can have darkness around Superman, but Superman himself cannot be dark, or he's not Superman. Because when he goes dark, if he decides to kill somebody, we're all host. Did you play the Injustice games?
Yes, I did.
I mean, that's the prime example. If Superman decides he's had enough, that's it.
And I think that you can't jump to Superman having that dark moment so early, because like it kind of undermined Batman versus Superman, because Batman needed to see the superhero, superhuman, and be like, okay, he's good, but he needs... we need to have a backup plan in case he goes rogue. Because if he is this superhuman abilities, there's no hope for us if he goes dark.
Right.
And so, like, he needs time to prepare and always have in the back of his mind something's going to go wrong with this guy.
Yeah. And that is very... all the people who talk smack about that movie, I kind of liked it.
I enjoyed it.
It was very Batman, too. Like, figure out, okay, if these guys ever go bad, because that's what Batman does. Every one of his allies, if they ever go bad, he's prepared to deal with it.
That is how he gets kicked out of the Justice League, because he has a file on everyone.
Yes. And that was a great... I can't remember which one of the animated movies that was.
Yes.
Was it Doom?
Yes, I think so.
Where they find out about his files and they're all mad at him, especially because they all get stolen and they get used against him. Oh, it was a great one. But it's like, you have to understand, he's the one with no powers. But he's also the one who's going to make sure that he can deal with you if you go bad.
Yes, he has the super intelligence.
Yes. So that's actually how I get in discussions at work. Everybody at work loves to have the discussion with me on who would win between Batman and Superman. Or not Superman, but Spider-Man. Because I'm a huge Spider-Man junkie. And I have been ever since. Because I used to watch Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends when I was a kid. But then I read a reprint of the first comic, and the first time I read, with great power comes great responsibility. That's the parable of the talents.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, there it is. But how he came to that conclusion and how that makes him who he is, because the spider bite didn't make him Spider-Man. That moment made him Spider-Man.
Yes.
That was his, what I call the come to Jesus moment, where you figure out where your life is going. And that's made me a huge Spider-Man fan ever since. But so I always end up in these discussions. We got a big DC fan at work, and he likes to go by me and says, Batman is better. Even though he's now showing me the stats, and he's like, yeah, it looks like, you know, everywhere he goes, he finds Spider-Man would win. And I said, because the main thing, Batman beats all of the Justice League because they have an exploitable weakness. Spider-Man does not have an exploitable weakness. But if he had one and you brought them with him, his spider sense would warn him that you've a threat to him.
So I think you'd have to have an older Batman and like a fairly new Spider-Man for Batman to stand a real chance, just because there's a lot that Spider-Man is still learning, doesn't know because he's a young teenager.
If you were doing like the Tom Holland Spider-Man and the Ben Affleck Batman, where it's like the older experienced Batman and then the, you know, although the Tom Holland Spider-Man has seen some stuff now.
Yes.
He has fought Thanos, you know. He's seen some stuff. I think he's now ready for Batman.
He is. But that would have to be the battle for it to have a fair shakedown of who could possibly win.
Yeah. Because if you go like comic book version, the comic book version of Spider-Man has lost his spider sense. And Shang-Chi showed up, said, like, you've relied too much on that. You need to be able to learn how to fight without it. And taught him, and they developed Spider-Fu. So he's got his own fighting style. Then he got his spider sense back, and so now he's got a good mix. So now, like, he could match Batman in a fair fight, but he could also hit harder. Although Spider-Man pulls his punches a lot, like Superman would really have to. So, but one thing I also like to point to people who are like big Batman fans, and I love Batman. I got so many Batman toys in my room, you wouldn't believe. In my office, I keep calling it my room, but it's my office. But if you go and you read the JLA versus Avengers.
Yes.
Because him and Captain America kind of square off, and you have one where they don't even throw a punch at the last time that they meet up. Oh, he's got to grade something.
Oh,
they kind of square off, and they kind of move around, and they test it, and they're like, everything is a counter and everything. He can watch this, and he actually says to Captain America, conceivably, you would win this fight, but it would take us a very long time, and we don't have that kind of time to just find out. But Batman admitting that Captain America would beat him. I was like,
Yeah. So there's an interesting debate I saw on Twitter or X between Chiefs players about Superman versus Thor.
Superman.
And that's what I said.
Yeah.
Granted,
Thor's magic with that lightning could hurt Superman.
Yes.
But Superman has broken planets in half.
He has. And so it was MVS and Trey Smith that were having that debate. And MVS is like, you guys don't have all the facts. And I'm like, but we do have all the facts if you follow both. Which, yeah, like in the Marvel comics, Thor is my favorite. Thor is interesting to me. Yeah. It's Shakespeare in space.
Yeah.
And so, and in the movies, honestly, Ragnarok might be my favorite MCU movie.
That was great.
And
yeah,
like, it's hilarious, but then you get to see Thor like fully unleashed, which is what I had been waiting for the whole time.
When that Led Zeppelin music hits towards the end and he goes for it, you're like, yes! I almost wanted to stand up in that theater.
I'm like, finally, it's not all about the hammer.
Right. It's the God of Thunder.
Yes.
And he's bringing the thunder. Oh, yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, that scene is epic.
Yes. So,
and that's what gave me so much hope going into Thor Love and Thunder.
Yeah.
And it's a movie Dave and I disagree about.
Because
I actually like it, but I think that you have to view it from Korg being the narrator. And that it's an unreliable narrator, that you're kind of getting the kids' version of things of how it went down.
And he's trying to keep it light instead of, because that's the one thing I think that felt wrong about it is you could have some funny stuff happen to Thor, but Thor needs to remain who he is, and he's fairly serious.
Yes.
And it's sort of like we were talking to Superman. Dark stuff can happen around him, but he can't become dark. And Thor, you know, he's got a bit of a sense of humor, but he cannot be stupid buffoonery like they've made him. But maybe I like this idea. So if he was telling a story to kids, he might clown just a little bit.
Yes. That's how
I see what you're going.
I view it. And since like that's, I mean, Taika is going to Taika the movie up. And so, but it starts off with him telling the story of Love and Thunder. And so, for me, that's how it works out to make it a good movie. Cause you talk to Dave and Dave's like, they ruined maybe the best Marvel villain out there. And so
maybe they did. Yeah.
Like completely took away all the threat of him wiping out all these gods and superheroes. Yeah. And so, yes, I enjoyed the movie.
Yeah, it was, I had fun with it.
It was fun. It was a popcorn movie.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting Citizen Kane.
Right. I have to do that with a lot of movies. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go in and try to have some fun with it. That's why I've only seen that last Star Wars sequel, whichever one, the Rise of Skywalker, I guess, whatever.
Not the last Jedi, that was the second one. The Rise of Skywalker,
I do not want to watch it again because that's when I'm going to tear it apart. Same way with Independence Day. The first one, I kind of liked it the first time.
Yes.
I watched it the second time. I was like, this is terrible. So then when they made a sequel, it's like, I'll go, but I know to watch it once and just popcorn it and then never touch it again. And I had fun with it.
So I took the Rise of Skywalker, like I came in with some high expectations because you have Skywalker's name on it.
Right.
And like there's all these crazy fan rumors going around this movie, which might be the downfall of like these geek IPs is that you get a lot of fan rumors before the movie. And so like I have something in my mind like the Knights of Ren are going to be doing some awesome things during this. Nope.
Yeah.
That wasn't a thing. And so like I'm instantly critiquing it and then I'm just tearing it apart and I feel bad, but
I tried not to because I was like, it's Star Wars. I want to have fun. I want to enjoy a Star Wars movie. So like The Last Jedi, I watched it the first time. I was like, hey, that was kind of fun. I mean, have some problems. Watched the second time. I was like, there's some stuff to think out. Third time I watched it, I was like, oh, good Lord. What did they do? You know, it took me a while because I was trying to like it. I was making myself like it. And I even wrote some blog posts on NeverlandPodcast.com where I defended it.
Yes, yes.
But I can't defend it anymore. The more I watched it, I was like, I can't watch this anymore.
So I liked Last Jedi, but I only watched it twice.
Yeah, stop right there and don't watch it anymore.
But I also remember thinking, because when I watched the original trilogy, I'm a kid, but I'm a kid in the 90s watching it. Right. So, like, it isn't sacred, like, to me.
Like it would be for Dave and I, because we grew up, you know.
But I remember thinking, Luke whined so much. So, like, when people complain that Luke is a wine bag in The Last Jedi and he wouldn't run away, I'm like, no, he would. He would. Trust me. Yeah. Go back and watch the originals.
But it seems like when he's older and mature, he's supposed to be more of a Jedi Master. We should see him differently.
That is
one thing that the sequel has kind of messed up is like Han and Leia should never have been separated. That was a great thing. We it took three movies to get there. But we got a depressed and, you know, Han's is still having to work in his retirement. We have a Luke who's a depressed old master. It's like, these are people that we saw got built up in the last movie. We don't need to see them broken down to build them up again or anything. Yes. We need to see Rey get built up instead of coming in and be perfect at everything instantly.
Oh, yeah.
That was the problem. I was like, I kind of liked Rey, but I was like, I want to grow with her.
Well,
that's how we love a character is when we start out when they have nothing and we grow with them and we watch them grow and become the hero. Like Frodo Baggins comes from nothing. And, you know, and really we see Sam to be the hero. And like, that's one of the still. Well, I think one of y'all put it. It was like, what is the greatest trilogy ever? And why is it Lord of the Rings? You know, I think you said something like that.
Yes.
Like Lord of the Rings, like, I don't know. I love Star Wars, but that's because I grew up. But Lord of the Rings might just be superior. He might be right about that. But I still love Star Wars.
Like when Rey's doing her thing, she doesn't struggle with anything at all. Yeah. Like when Luke first gets his lightsaber, he nearly stabs it through his eye. Like old Ben Kenobi's like, what are you doing?
Yeah. And then he gets the training thing. Oh my goodness, that is an awesome costume. Anyways, and he's getting zapped by the little training droid thing. It's like, yes. He fails this stuff before he finally, it's like a whole entrance in Return of the Jedi. After we've seen Luke go through all this stuff, and now we have this gap of time, Return of the Jedi, when he makes that entrance, it's just, you just feel the presence of like, ooh, Luke has really matured. He's a different person than we're used to.
So,
because he's not nearly as whiny, yes, by the time you get to Return of Jedi. He's been through some
whiny
stuff. So it's the growth that we've got with Luke that...
The only thing that I can justify it with, besides that it's ridiculous that they didn't have it mapped out, the trilogy before they started making it, is that... That him being able to see that Kylo Ren's going down a dark path, or Ben at that time is going down a dark path, that he's like, I gotta end it now.
Yeah, that didn't make sense. He could have sat down with him. This is his nephew. You think he would have sat down? It's like, what's going on, buddy? Come on.
Yeah, your grandfather struggled with this stuff, and he didn't have
Luke
someone.
Struggled with it. He had his moment there.
Are we talking about Luke?
Luke
in the sequels and how he is in The Last Jedi as a hermit, a mopey hermit.
The built-up character we got.
No. Is absolutely the course of his character, and it makes total sense. Is that what we're talking about?
Defend it.
Defend it?
Okay.
He's impetuous. He's impulsive. And he has a tendency to be kind of pouty and mopey. And he's like that throughout the series.
Well, at least in the first one. I mean, kind of.
And by the time where you say when he walks in The Return of the Jedi, he's like some big bad Jedi, and yet he's going to lose. He's losing. If it's not for Anakin, it's Darth Vader that saves the day, right? He's literally dying.
Yeah, he's being killed. He couldn't stand up. Didn't stand up to the Emperor.
And so, to me, 30 years later, or whatever it's supposed to be, do we know how much time it is? Someone knows.
I think it's supposed to be like 30 years.
Yeah,
something like
30
that.
Years later.
That's what the Thrawn trilogy. Well, I guess it's not the Thrawn trilogy anymore, but I still call it that. I think that was supposed to be like 20. Yeah. No, that was 25 years later, wasn't it? Yeah, something like that.
I could totally see him being the idealist, thinking he's just going to start a Jedi school. Everything's going to be peachy. It's going to go well. Then he starts having visions about his nephew being a terrible, terrible guy. And he's like, look, Luke's not a dummy. Once he starts having the visions, he knows. He knows what's up.
Yeah.
That's happening, bro.
But you think he would sit down and talk to him and say, hey.
He's impetuous and impulsive.
But he kind of grew out of that. You'd think he's had more years.
Well, he did. He didn't kill him. Well, he just thought about it. And then Kylo woke up at the wrong time.
Yeah.
He just woke up at a bad time.
Or Ben woke up at the
wrong
time.
And then after all that happens and his Jedi Orphanage Academy gets burned down, then, of course he's going to go off and mope and be mad at the Jedi.
That reminds me of a thought that I've had. But all right, so with Mandalorian, I think the reason why they've brought Grogu back to be with the Mando is if Grogu was at that Jedi Academy and learning from Luke, then we all know what happens to Grogu later. You know, he's dead. He got killed by Kylo Ren then with all the rest, most likely. So by pulling Grogu away, they have the opportunity to bring him back as an adult version of himself in some later movies.
Okay. I'm here for it.
I was kind of thinking that. I was like, oh, yeah. Not to mention, he's the moneymaker on Mandalorian. Although I'm kind of getting tired of them just exploiting this is not supposed to be the Grogu show. But he's kind of their moneymaker. Okay. They learned it. But if you leave him in that Jedi Academy, what eventually happens, what would have happened, was probably he'd been killed by Kylo Ren.
Here's the question I'm really interested in, though. Now, does adult Grogu talk like Yoda? Or does Yoda have some sort of neurological disorder where he talks like that?
George Lucas actually said that the way Yoda talks was supposed to be the way they talked back when he was younger. And that was supposed to be the way, sort of like how everybody kind of has a British accent when they're speaking in like a political arena. It's like the formal speech. Okay. So like how Leia would talk normal to everybody else. But when she's in there with the Imperials, sort of that accent comes out.
All right.
And so George Lucas was talking about that Yoda spoke the way they would speak when he was young, and he got that speech habit because that was formal speech back then.
Oh, okay.
So Grogu would not end up talking that way. But I thought that was very interesting. So that was just the way they formatted stuff. But I guess if 900 years, you go back that far, I guess maybe that's the one. So that High Republic series, I expect everybody should be talking like that.
Okay. So what I'm hearing, though, is if we get adult Grogu, I'm expecting him to come in first frame and be like, bro, you left You left the toilet seat up again, Mando. I will fall through. I'm right. Too little.
Yeah. Because he's going to learn how to talk from the Mandalorian. He's going to, that's how he's going to learn his speech.
Yeah.
So
there you go.
But Yoda would have learned to talk from what people he was around when he was little, which would have been, I guess, a weird formal speech that they had back when he was a kid. So like when you're a kid, you learned English from your parents and everybody around you.
Actually, I learned it from the Dukes of Hazzard.
There you go.
That's where I learned my English. Every once in a while, I'll break out in a yeehaw.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm a member of the Roscoe P. Coltrane fan club. I think he got a raw deal. He's just a guy trying to do his job.
Well, but he was also kind of, I think, corrupt like Boss Hogg. The only one who was really doing his job was Enos. Enos was like the...
Enos was the same.
He was a good dude.
There will be no Enos slander on this That's interview. Right.
Gotta love Enos.
Yeah, I don't... Mm-hmm. You know, I think the Dukes, they're bootleggers, man. They're breaking the law. Like, what's the deal here? How come Boss Hogg's a bad guy?
They're former bootleggers. They're supposed to be on probation, right? They've stopped the bootlegging. Yeah. They just, you know... Just good old boys making their way in the world, just getting a little trouble every once in a while, right?
Everybody who's tell me everybody who is sensitive to Boss Hogg is now a Trump voter. They're definitely voting Trump, right? You know that Boss Hogg, he wasn't so bad. He's all right. He's just making a little money off of what? And what are you doing anything for if you're not making a little money?
I actually have a signed photo of Sorrel Brook. My parents got me at a World of Wheels when I was little.
Wow. When he was in time. I wanted his car with the bullhorns on the front.
Oh, dude.
The convertible yeah. Caddy. So nice, man.
And if you ever get up to St. Joe, there's an antique. I probably got a photo of it somewhere. There's an antique store off of 44, exit 44 off of I-29. They have one of Roscoe's uniforms.
Wow.
Framed, signed, everything.
Yeah. I'd rather have Cooter's hat.
Oh, yeah. That would be thing. I think that's one of the only toys I had when I was little is I had the little Hot Wheels of Cooter's truck.
There you go.
No, I had Daisy's Jeep too, but I went to the little General Lee, but those were hard to come by.
Oh, everybody really?
Wanted that General Lee Hot Wheels, man. Yeah.
I had like three of those.
Really?
I had like three General Lees. They'd get messed up back in the day. You would play real rough with the Hot Wheels back then. You'd like on the sidewalks try to roll them as far as you could, and they get all scratched up.
I wish I still had my little Spider-Man car that I had.
Those were the days. I wish I'd had any of the toys I had when I was a kid. My mom was just talking to me about, like, she almost bought me the AT-AT, the Imperial Walker.
Oh.
But I did have the Millennium Falcon. And I was like, I'm pretty sure she sold that at a garage sale for like 50 cents or something.
Yeah.
Although, you know, it had wear and tear. The satellite dish on the top was broken off. Yeah. You know, the secret compartment that Chewie hides in, you know, didn't work right.
Yeah, I think my mom gave away all my X-Men figures. Breaks my heart because that's probably a mint right now. Those old classic 90s, you know, like the first line of them. I had like the original X-Factor, X-Cyclops.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I remember it's the toys that are sort of under the radar that I kind of miss. So like I had lots of G.I. Joe Star Wars, but you know what I miss?
Right.
You remember Battle Beasts? Battle Beasts were like, they were like these little figurines. And they had the little hologram, whether they were earth, fire, wind, ice, fire. Or, yeah, yeah.
And they
you had to
like
apply heat. You had to press on them to see what they were. It was supposed to be like a rock, paper, scissors type thing, that sort of deal. And then there was muscles. You remember muscle figures? The wrestlers, muscles. Pro wrestling figures.
Apparently based off of a manga or an anime or something.
Yeah, they were really cool. And I love those. And I don't even know why now, but I just did.
They were awesome. They were fun to play with. And I've been seeing some Masters of the Universe versions apparently are supposed to be out there. Oh, my goodness. I would love those.
Yes, same. I got handed the mic randomly. So I did not play with those toys, but I did play with Transformers. So that in Hot Wheels.
That's like in the 90s, Transformers. Like what characters would you have had like in the 90s? I mean,
I definitely had an Optimus Prime, but then they got into the Animal Kingdom.
Oh, yeah, because you had Beast Wars that started in the 90s.
Yeah, so I had some of those, and then Power Rangers like became huge, and so I was all about Power Rangers and so long Transformers, which was basically the Power Rangers transformed into one big robot. So
yeah, I looked at Power, of course, I was older, you know, when Power Rangers started up. I looked at that and said, this is like the perfect storm of timing.
Yes.
Because you basically got Voltron that I grew up with Ninja Turtle fighting moves.
Yeah.
And dinosaur robots were in the time of Jurassic Park had just come out. I couldn't get into it. I was like, I know why the kids are into it because everything they might have loved other than the kids would not have known Voltron. But Japan knows the Voltron formula works.
Yes.
They've got so many Gundam and whatever, you know, they know how to make giant robots and make it cool.
And in the 90s, there was like four different versions of Voltron that weren't Voltron.
Yeah, they kept trying to bring it back.
Yes.
But you never get the magic of the original. Although I've seen on Crunchyroll, they have the original anime that became Voltron with its original language and all, and it's subtitled, and it's a completely different show. Well, at least the Lion one, because they actually blended that one with this other show that was kind of, to me, Star Trek-y.
Oh.
But it had its own giant robot, and so that's where we had the Vehicle Voltron and the Lion Voltron. But, yeah, on Crunchyroll, you can actually sit and watch the original anime of what became the Lions, and it was supposed to have been like this robot who had actually was such a good fighter, he was vain that he challenged some sort of goddess, and that's how he was supposed to have gotten separated in the Lions, because he got boastful and thought, oh, I'm going to take her out, too. And she's like, oh, yeah, you're Lions, I'm separating you. And that's why I got humbled. I was like, that's different than what I expected. But yeah, it's in the character names, everything is entirely different. But it's on Crunchyroll if you want. Oh. If you don't mind the subtitle, I only watched like a couple episodes. I'm like, this is different. I kind of like it. But
so I saw a study last week that millennials and younger watch a lot of things with subtitles on anyway. So yeah. Like subtitles don't really bother me too much. Now, I don't turn them on, and my wife doesn't either, unless it's like we're watching a foreign language film. But
yeah,
to have them on, I'm like, oh, this isn't bad.
I'm getting old enough, and I went to too many loud concerts where I have tinnitus, where if there's any sort of background noise, when you have I have four kids, so there's always background noise. I need the subtitles on a lot of the time, or otherwise I can't make out the words.
I'm finding certain video games I'll leave subtitles on because there'll be some of the other noises, and especially like the Final Fantasy Remake, and right now I'm playing Final Fantasy Rebirth. I've left the subtitles on because sometimes there's so much noise or the music is so loud that I can't hear what they're saying. And plus, it's fun, like the background characters, they'll put little subtitles off to the side, all the background characters, and the fun conversations that are going on that you're not paying attention to. So there's times I stop and I'll just eavesdrop on like side characters and what they're talking about.
It's used to be an adventurer like you until I took an arrow in the knee. Oh, yes.
Yes.
I do enjoy having the subtitles on, especially in games that have loud music. So
yeah.
Oblivion and Skyrim both, I have it on, and it's like, this is fun.
Yeah, and I haven't played Oblivion yet. I'm going to one of these days.
Oblivion, it's scary.
Really?
I'm not going to lie, because you go into the Oblivion gates, and the Oblivion world has these demons that you're fighting, the Daedra, and it's a little dark, but I think I'm doing the Lord's work in there, just purging it.
Purging into the evil, which is how I end up playing horror games. I don't really like to watch a lot of horror movies, but I like playing a horror game because it's me overcoming this horrible evil,
you know,
despite anything that happens to me.
Did you ever play Friday the 13th on Nintendo?
On the NES?
Yeah.
Yeah, we
that
had
game
that
was, that game was so awesome, and I don't know why, but it freaked us out back in the day because we were kids. Yeah,
we were kids.
But that game was great. You're just around the lake. The cabins and all that, and you're running away from Jason. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
That some of those movie-based games for the NES were kind of amazing. The Jaws game was actually really good, too.
I actually like that, too.
Played that way too much.
And I actually enjoyed the E.T. game on Atari.
Wow.
I had fun with that. See, if you said
Isn't that one of the biggest flops ever?
Well, it sold.
In the video game world?
Because everybody was pre-buying, because it was like printing money, really, at the time with E.T.
That wasn't the one that ends up, like,
but that was
the landfill?
One. It was so bad that ended up, they've went to that landfill and found out it was not full of E.T. There were some E.T. cartridges. There's a documentary the guy made. They went and they dug up where the landfill was, and they found it all the Atari stuff, but it wasn't all E.T. But there was some E.T. But it became infamous of being, it's bad, because it's weird. You have these pits you're going into to get your pieces of the phone. It doesn't make sense. Like, when did that happen in the movie? But if you shut off the scientists and all the people who will come and kidnap E.T. and take away all your stuff, it becomes just fun finding the pieces and then going in and see if you get back to the ship on time. That was fun. Something I couldn't really lose at. Sort of like the Superman game on the Atari. You couldn't really lose. It was basically just timing how fast could you accomplish everything.
Yeah.
Because you're Superman, you ain't going to lose.
If you were going for realism or accuracy in Atari games based on movies, I don't really know what to tell you. Anyways, unless it was Empire Strikes Back, which is shockingly
fun.
The Hoth, the whole, it's because it's only based in the Hoth stuff. They don't go out of that.
Right.
You're flying a ship and fighting walkers. That was shockingly accurate. But
yeah. Repetitive, but fun.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a game my cousins had. I think it was ColecoVision. Was that the one with the pad?
Yeah, I think so.
So it had the little circular. It was like almost looked like today's TV remotes.
Yeah, and it was better graphics than any Atari.
Yeah, and it had a little keypad like a phone would have. And you slid the card for the game you were playing into the keypad, and then it had a little circular thing to control direction.
Yep.
There was a Dungeons and Dragons game for the ColecoVision, if I'm getting the name right. Might have been Intellivision, I don't know. That was amazing. We played that. So that was right before NES comes out.
Yeah.
And it was very Zelda like, right? So you're just going through dungeons and you're trying to find items and kill monsters. And we were really into that. And then Zelda comes out and then we play that nonstop.
Yeah. Although first time playing Zelda, you're like, what am I doing? Okay, I found a sword.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, back then we didn't have the internet.
Right.
We had to call a 900 number and pay $3.99 per minute to ask, excuse me, sir, where is the silver arrow? I need the silver arrow.
Yeah, that or you're at school and in the middle of class and you're saying, have you found the thing yet? No, what is that? It's over in the thing.
You subscribed to Nintendo Power in the hopes that the secret you needed was going to be in their one page, secrets for that issue.
That's how we all learn the Konami code is, magazines, talking to our classmates, up, up, down, down, left, right, left, right, BA, start.
Yeah, and then now these kids have internet and they don't know what it's like. They don't know the struggle.
Yeah, and even now, if I have a part of the game that I get stuck on, I get up and I go over to my computer or I pull out my phone and I'm like, okay, I'm here. Somebody's already figured it out and published it somewhere and will get me through. That's how I got through Skyrim. When I was talking to Cody earlier, which we weren't recording, is finding all the exploits in there to where you could slide underneath the underground, come underneath, grab all the treasure and all the swords out of this one guy, and then how to use the alchemy to make yourself completely invincible with a one-hit kill sword.
There you go. My current video game is very boring. I play Rocket League and recently WWE 2K23, just GM mode. I don't actually play. My son will come in and be like, why aren't you playing any of the wrestling matches? He's like, oh, I don't do that. I just play the simulation. I just do the GM mode. He's like, this is boring. I'm like, you get out.
Yeah.
You get out right now.
I think I played a little bit of that, and I was like, well, but I'm going to wrestle. Oh, but
listen, I took WCW to the top. Better than SmackDown. Better than all. I'm killing them. Killing them all. They're trying to sabotage me, and like, nope. Y'all don't put on as good a show as I do. I took him to the top.
So are you Eric Bischoff in it?
I am Eric Bischoff. Yeah.
Yes, I do the WWE GM mode as well. That's fun. But Skyrim is one of my go-to games. Civilization, Sid Meier's Civilization.
Revolution on the old PS3.
Yeah, that one's a classic.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I tried Civilization 6 and I got so confused and lost and I got wiped out.
I had to dedicate a whole day to Civilization 6, but now I'm like, okay, I know what I'm doing. As long as barbarians don't completely sabotage me early on, I can either win with a peaceful victory or I can win with religious domination. Rarely will I go full war, but I've won a few that way.
That's the thing with the Civilization Revolution. I was like, yeah, go ahead and keep crossing me in now, Germany, because as soon as I get my nukes, you're first. That's what I do because I try to play peacefully. I don't start any stuff, but I will not. If they want something, it's like, hey, we've discovered you learned this. Now give it to us or we're attacking you. Like, bring it. If you want to trade, I will gladly trade with any nation. But if they make threats, I'm like, your threats mean nothing to me. Move on.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what the problem with Civilization games are? This is my problem. I'm all for it through the historical eras. Once we get to present era and it's more about diplomacy, I'm like bored. Bored. I don't want to do diplomacy.
I want to blow everybody up. That's why I did the original Civilization. I was like, yeah, let's just go conquer everything.
Yeah, there you go.
And then I named all my cities after Star Wars planets.
Yeah. So what you're trying to do is by the time you get to the nuclear age, already be, pretty much running the world.
Yeah.
And you get nukes, to continue your domination, right? Not for diplomacy purposes.
Just like, oh, did you want to start a war? Did you see this arsenal? I have a nuke. That's the only thing.
He's like, all right, Zulu Nation. Yeah. Think you're going to attack my little outpost? Nuked.
Nuke.
Nuked.
or they have that one city that's out on an island somewhere. I don't feel like loading all my troops on a boat. Let's just get rid of you.
Yeah. Oh, Iroquois. Nice that you've made it this far. Nuked. Yeah. Oh, British. Well, we beat you once. We'll beat you again. Because you got to be the Americans, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Because if you're not the Americans, they're too aggressive. The computer, America on computer mode is just too aggressive. Like, they won't leave you alone. Like, oh my gosh.
You got to get like out of India here. India is on that on revolution. India is constantly always a thorn in my side. Like, Gandhi, you got a picture of Gandhi as the leader, and you're always trying to pick a war with me?
Yeah.
I don't understand.
Yep, for sure. For sure.
All right, I'm going to check our time. Okay, we got about 40 minutes. But I said we managed to babble and just keep on going, and I could wrap this up, I guess, right here. Let's remind everybody where everybody can find y'all.
All right, so we are Pop Culture Pastor, the podcast. It's like Spaceballs, the podcast. Spaceballs, the toilet paper. We don't have toilet paper, though. Pop Culture Pastor podcast. You can find us on Apple, on Spotify, on Google for as long as Google's a thing, on YouTube. Just go check us out. We're the comic book word bubble with the hot 80s colors.
There you go. Yeah.
And yeah, subscribe, follow us. You can find something that we've talked about that because we're all over the place.
They are.
You just got to find a topic that looks interesting to you and click on that one and give it a shot.
And I really enjoy actually doing the Be Kind Rewind shows where you go talk about an old movie. Those are always fun.
Yeah, we weren't on YouTube for the longest time, and I recently started YouTube, but it's just our podcast with the logo. There's no video. Yeah.
The same way
Be Kind Rewinds have actually picked up steam on YouTube. So a lot of someone have discovered them. They've discovered them on YouTube, and we put them in the folders because YouTube's good like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you can put them in the folders, and there's a Be Kind Rewind folder. Someone's been listening to all those.
Nice.
So yeah, we're picking up some YouTube views.
Awesome. All righty, but this has been me with Bulb Culture Pastors, and I'm going to pass it back to me in the studio.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, so here at the end of the show is where I'll go ahead and mention Dubby. If you go to NeverlandPodcast.com, you'll find links for Dubby. You'll find links for Podgagement. If you go and you click through those and you make a purchase of either one of those, it does help out the show. But I do recommend, of course, going through Patreon. You can get ad-free versions of the show on Patreon. Also, with Red Circle, who I'm using as my provider, there is an exclusive that you can set up, an exclusive account, and become an exclusive subscriber, which also I don't put the ads in when I upload the episodes in there and release the episodes over there from Red Circle. So I do, of course, want to thank Darren Wilhite. Everybody I usually thank. I don't have my notes in front of me. My computer needed a reboot, and I needed to get out the door. So I'm just going to go ahead and end the show by saying, get lost in an adventure. And I will see you next time with more exciting fun. Also, Dan Veets of thankyouwaltdisney.org. You're going to enjoy that. I had a panel with him. I will share the audio in a future episode.